Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Director of Community Projects and Partnerships and coordinator and host for SPIRIT. The OU created SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Several months ago, we were privileged to welcome my colleagues from Yachad to present for SPIRIT. That session, Grandparenting Your Special Needs Grandchild, can be found in the SPIRIT archives. Today, we are so happy to welcome back Amanda Levy, LCSW, who is the Clinical Director of Yachad, Batya Jacob, Development Executive of Yachad, and Rabbi David Cohen, Yachad National Director of Community Engagement, to share with us on the topic of Because Everyone Belongs, ensuring that individuals with special needs are included. It is my honor to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Amanda, Batya, and Rabbi Cohen. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Morning, everybody. Thank you so much for having us. This is truly a pleasure to be with everyone again here. And Judy, thank you for inviting us back. We are pretty passionate about what we do and have been for a long time. Who else better to really share with us the experience of what it's like to be with an individual with special needs, with challenges? There's been so much language and vernacular than parents who work for Yachad and with Yachad. It's kind of funny how we think that maybe by 2021, we'd have it all figured out. We'd be at a different place in terms of acceptance, in terms of comfort level, in terms of acceptance and integration into the community at large. And I think we've come a very long way, but as we're going to hear from our parents and our Yachad staff, some of that's true and some of that's not. So without further ado, I'm gonna ask questions for both of you. And perhaps if there are questions from the audience, you'll write them down in the chat and we'll get to them at the end, okay? So maybe what we should do first is identify the age of your children currently, and also if you could briefly describe their challenges. I don't know who wants to go first.
Ladies first.
Okay, Batya.
I was going to say rabbis first.
And if you could just also, as you're thinking through this, when the challenge was identified, and also a little bit about how, for sure, you yourself, but also parents and grandparents reacted.
So our son, Avi, was identified really at birth. We were very lucky that I was trained to identify his challenge. Avi is currently 32. He has a profound hearing loss in both ears. That piece of Avi was identified very, very quickly. It also is a hereditary condition, so we kind of knew to look for it. So we knew this pretty quickly. It didn't mean that it was identified and accepted by everybody else around us. He also had and has overlapping ADHD that helps define who he is. In some ways has helped him get through his life, in some ways has hindered. But when he was identified, we had a lot of resistance from family members. Family members kind of felt like other people's kids could have this disability, but not my husband's and mine. It would be accepted from the family members who also had the hearing loss, but why would it be ours, our child? So it was like this upward battle in some ways to get the grandparents especially to accept that we really needed to deal with it.
Batya, did they think it was misdiagnosed? Did they think that it wasn't correctly defined?
I think they thought that I was being a little bit of a hysterical mom at the beginning, that I was maybe looking for a problem that they didn't necessarily thought was there. And it took a lot of time. I think one of the grandparents felt a lot of guilt because she saw it as coming from her side of the family only, even though deafness is recessive. So I knew intellectually it had to be from both sides. And I could trace where it was coming from both sides. But I think that particular grandparent had so much guilt that she just couldn't talk to me about it and couldn't deal with it. And it took a lot of time for me to really be able to get her to open up. And we were very, very close from the moment I knew her. And it was the only thing we ever couldn't talk about for months and months. It was very hard, but we got through it. But that it was really resistant. I think other members of the family were better at accepting it than the grandparents in some ways. David.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, thank you so much. So our son, Yedidya, who is our Bechor, our eldest, is 16 years old today. He, Baruch Hashem, thankfully, is a wonderful, growing, very big boy. We found out he was diagnosed with Down syndrome literally probably 10 minutes after he was born. He was born in Jerusalem, in Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, Shaare Tzedek Medical Center. The pregnancy was rather typical, and the birth, albeit through cesarean section, was not particularly concerning, but I sensed something was amiss in the operating room when the baby came out, and when I confronted the doctor shortly afterwards, upon leaving the room, she kind of made some sort of funny comment, which, again, I wasn't expecting anything, so it was a little bit concerning, but didn't really know what we were dealing with. And a few moments later, I walked into the nursery, and there was a doctor who was kind of poking around with our son. My wife was transferred to a place where she could recuperate from the procedure, so I was really there by myself. And the doctor kind of got all tense, and he was like, "Is this your son?" I said, "I think so." And he kind of just looked without much forethought, just kind of like, just kind of came out of him, "Your son has Down syndrome," which was kind of like a whirlwind. And I kind of worked in a Camp Hask for special needs years before, but I didn't really know, you know, really what that really, really meant. And obviously you're overwhelmed at that moment with trepidation, with fear, and you don't even know what to do. You know, you begin a very slow process of readjusting expectations. My parents are actually here on this Zoom. They're in Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh right now, and I'm so glad that they're here with us. So we could maybe ask them how they felt, if they want to talk about it. But in the fairness, I'm not going to put them on the spot. And in fairness, I'll just speak kind of more generally. You know, having many years of experience observing others be similarly situated. Obviously, it's very challenging for parents and grandparents when something doesn't go as expected, and when we're kind of thrown for a loop or there's kind of some sort of curveball. And of course, it's disappointing. Everybody has great aspirations. You know, they want whatever they may want for their child or their grandchild. They obviously want them to live the fullest, most complete, healthiest life as possible and to reach their potential. I think over time, many of us who are in this world, in the world of Yachad, in the world of special needs, kind of mature and grow and understand that means different things for different people, and that and then maybe it's a beautiful gift and opportunity having you know, such an individual, whatever the limitation may be, in our families, and they have a lot to add. And that's certainly a lot of what our discussion will be about today as we progress. But yeah, I think it's just to validate the feeling. I think certainly for the parents, it's a disappointment. Certainly for the grandparents, it's hurtful and painful to see. I'm sure on a double level, their children suffering and also their grandchild, concern about a grandchild.
David, I just wanted to comment on that. I feel like it's so perfect. That's such a universal feeling among all parents who have a child with some type of difference. And of course, you're speaking to, you know, all parents who want to know that their child will be born healthy and be able to do whatever they need to do and want to do. And at the same time, you're highlighting, I think, also the importance of acknowledging a certain amount of loss, right? A certain amount of awareness.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, there's a great poem by Emily Pearl Kingsley, who had a son with Down syndrome in particular, where it's called Welcome to Holland. Those who are in this universe are very familiar with it. It's about kind of planning a trip to Italy and ending up at Holland and kind of at first being tremendously disappointed that you prepared for all these amazing things in Italy and you ended up like kind of in no man's land at Holland. My backdrop is actually not Italy or Holland, I think, but it's somewhere in Europe. I think it's in Budapest, actually, but it's in Hungary. But the point being that, yeah, I mean, I think, look, all of life, I think you're saying it's a universal experience. I think all of life is about, at some level, dealing with frustrated expectations and readjusting and pivoting. I mean, all of COVID-19 certainly mm-hmm. Presented those opportunities for people. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of parallels between this unique experience that we speak of today and how it has hashlachot, how it has ramifications and an impact and import in many different realms of life and society.
I think also it's this fear of the unknown that you're navigating. Especially, I think when our kids were born, Yudija and Avi, there was so many unknowns, and as parents now also, you don't know where to go. Now we in Yachad really have worked and tried so hard for the community. We've just launched our REACH program to help parents with this navigation because there are so many unknowns. And it's that not knowing the first steps of where, who to reach out to, what we need to do, what other parents to speak to. That's so frightening for so many of us as parents, as grandparents, as family members. So it's on one level, it's the loss. And on the other level, it's the unknown. Where are our kids going to be in 10 years, in 20 years, in 40 years?
I'm thinking, while I'm listening to you, I'm thinking how hard and challenging as parents and grandparents within your individual families had to figure out so many things and continue to figure out so many things. And then you had to kind of face the community and the environment that you live in around you. And I guess that kind of allows us to segue a little bit into asking about what was the experience living in your community with your son. Think of experiences, I'm thinking like at the post office, at the supermarket, maybe at the bus stop. And let's not forget the shul, right? A center of the Jewish community. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, if you want, I'll go first. I mean, Amanda, I just want to add one other point quickly, yeah. And that is that I guess Avi is basically almost double the age than Yedidya is, but it's we're very grateful and appreciative. Everything is obviously in life is timing, but then certainly anybody who would have a grandchild today who has some sort of special needs, so you know, we're so much more advanced as right. Batya just mentioned in terms of reach. This is my little one. He's actually not feeling so well today, so he's joining us. So just that's a little Malachi, but can say hi to everybody. So, but that being said, that we're very grateful that, you know, when I talk to parents of the previous generation, you know, they're like, wow, like if we only had what you have today. So things, and even Amanda, even though you began, like, you know, we are kind of, you would think maybe we'd be further along, but at the same time, I think it's always important to acknowledge kind of where we are. You asked in terms of community involvement. So I think, look, Yedidya, he was born in Israel, and we weren't really part of like a formal community at that particular time. And anyway, frankly, for the most part, like little babies, at least with Down syndrome, are very, very cute and are not majorly different than a typical child, other than a lot of therapy, et cetera. But all that's not really, that's kind of hidden from the public view. So I think as Yedidya has grown, he has been an essential component of all the communities that we've been blessed to be a part of, both the one that lived on the upper west side of Manhattan, now that we live in the five towns. I mean, he really, really has been very well integrated, very well received. Now, I'm not naive. I understand that obviously every disability is different. And
can you just get a little more specific about when you say integrated and well received? Just can you give a little example about that?
Sure, and I'll just give an example right now. So there's a shul in our neighborhood in North Windmere where I actually served as the Rav until recently. And my child, Yedidya, and my other children as well, particularly Yedidya, were very comfortable in that shul. For various reasons, I decided to move on. And now I daven in other shuls locally in the community on Shabbos morning. But Yedidya won't come with me elsewhere. Why? Because he's so at home in my previous shul. Everybody knows him there. He gets aliyahs there. He has like very formalized roles. He starts Pesukei Dezimra, and he's very well received and beloved within the community that he can't even imagine like moving on somewhere else, because it's just, that's his home. That's his shul. And he feels that way, and the Baal Batim feel that way. And I think it's a very beautiful expression of his integration into the community.
Wow, beautiful. Gotcha.
So, I think, especially when Avi was born, we had not such positive experiences within the community in general. I remember people had no shyness making comments about our child. Strangers in the supermarket would come up to us and say things like, Why do you have hearing aids on your baby? Why are you making him look like an old man? Wow. They said things to us like, well, how long do you think he's going to have to wear them? And we'd say, well, as long as he wants to hear. It was really quite incredible. Total strangers would come up to us and say this. And things like, somebody said to me once, well, why didn't you detect this when you were pregnant? You could have had an abortion. And I was like flabbergasted that somebody could come out and say that to me. It would never have even entered my brain to have thought that process. People had no shyness. Somebody walked into our home one Shabbos with their family, somebody we knew very well, were good friends, and saw hearing aids in his ears. He was about 8 months old, and announced to their children in a loud voice, you cannot eat here on Shabbos anymore. They don't keep kosher. They use electricity on Shabbos.
Wow.
You know, I'm struck by the complete lack of boundaries that people crossed. And yeah. I'm also struck by these comments that probably were said very long time ago, right?
And are still so emotional to a parent.
Yes.
And if they said it to me, I'm sure I'm not the only person in the world that these comments are said to. The lack of sensitivity that people have, and the thought that they think that they have the right to say these things to people, to strangers and to people that they know.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, that family was never invited back to our home.
I want to add something Batya brought to the fore, which I appreciate your openness and vulnerability. So two small things that I think about in terms of interactions with community, and I mean that like just kind of more interactions with peers or people in the community. So I think a few things. People sometimes say, is your son high functioning? I find that to be like a very strange question, I have to be honest. Like, let's call out the elephant in the room. Sometimes when people hear about something that's a little out of the box, they don't really know how to respond or how to react. And I think not to condone people's insensitivity, but obviously there's some level of discomfort. So I find, just in terms of educating others who maybe aren't part of this exact parasha, I think like one needs to be careful and thoughtful in terms of how they ask their questions. Just this Shabbos, actually, I went to a kiddush in my neighborhood. I went to wish mazel tov, and I was talking to the grandfather of this newborn, healthy, typical baby. And somehow we were talking, and I knew of him, and I told him that I had seen him speak once or something. And then he said to me, and somehow it came up that I have a child. I mentioned I have a son with Down syndrome. His face, his facial expression, immediately went to like this place of like pity and like, and I was like, right away, I was like, no, you got this all wrong, buddy. Like, I was like, you don't understand. Like, I was like, before he went there. So what's my point? I think we have to be thoughtful in terms of the questions we ask, in terms of the reactions we share. A person ideally, I guess, wants to be a mensch, wants to give comfort. You don't want to make a person uncomfortable when they're dealing with what's already a challenging situation. So I think it's, I always compare it a little bit, people go to a shiva call. Like, it's like one of the like worst experience. Thankfully, I've never sat shiva. I hope not to for a very long time, but I think people don't, they're just, you know, they don't know what to say. They say the wrong things. They focus on themselves instead of the mourners. Like, there's just kind of a context that's missing. So just that idea of like, is your child high functioning? I don't know what that means exactly. Save me your paid expressions. And also, I'll just, I happened to just spoken recently in a local shul on this topic on Shabbos morning. And somebody came over to me with a question after my presentation. They wanted to know if they should be asking somebody they know who has a child with a disability, if they should be asking about that child. And I said, absolutely. Like, they were saying they feel uncomfortable asking about the child. I felt that a lot when Yedidia was first born. I'd speak to my friends and they didn't know how to, they didn't know if it was okay to ask, and therefore they just didn't ask. And that's also hurtful. Like, he is part of our family. You should ask about him like any other child, so on and so forth. So again, I'm sure there are many other things that I could share or think of with more time. It's not really the topic for the moment, but I do think I think there are definitely communal pieces that can be handled better with greater education and greater sensitivity.
I'm also hearing that the two of you as parents often might find yourself in a position of educating people. And I would think that you didn't sign up for that initially, that, you know, that it's like you were dealing with enough.
We didn't sign up with you for the original thing originally.
Right.
certainly not to have.
No, but so not only
the
did
flip
you
side, not... So the flip side of that is, and I've heard, I'll attribute this to Rabbi Menachem Penner, Mark Penner, who's the Dean of REITs at Yeshiva University. He has a child with a disability and he speaks openly about the topic quite frequently. So he made the point many years ago at a Yachad family Shabbaton that resonated with me, which is that sadly the reality in life is that when you have a, we'll call it a minority issue, or you have an issue that's not on the communal agenda for most people, then of course the people that are going to end up pushing it forward are the people that are challenged with it, right? You find this, if you look at every major Jewish organization out there that supports some sort of issue, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, the people who are spearheading those initiatives and organizations tend to be people that they themselves had that challenge, therefore they understand it, therefore they understand how to respond to what the need is. To your point, Amanda, it takes a lot of energy, of course, to deal with your own insular situation. We're not necessarily looking on top of it to have the burden of educating others. On the other hand, there's a realization that if we don't, nobody else is going to.
Right. And
sometimes it is necessary.
I guess in my position and my experience in working with a lot of parents, I'd like to think of it as an opportunity, even though it is an additional kind of job or responsibility that you may have, but I think it can also be empowering. And rather than taking it in or sitting with something yourself, in a way, when you educate others or you respond to others in a way that hopefully sets a different kind of boundary or educates somebody, it may also give you or others as a parent or grandparent a little bit of, I don't know what to call it, sort of a feeling of like being able to be proactive or like you did something rather than just sit with it. That makes any sense. Yeah, okay. So thank you for, sharing some of those experiences in shul and at the supermarket and the post office. And One of the things we were wondering about is, what type of school did your child attend or attends? Without naming the school, I think it's better just to leave it more general. How did they, or do they include them or not? Were they creative? Were they accommodating? Are they accommodating? How did, or how do the teachers react? You know, you're in different stages of life, but do they see your child as a burden or as a blessing to their other students, to the staff group? How did the other children react? And were you as parents, I know I'm putting a lot in here, but how are you as parents included or not? Okay, you got that?
Maybe. So, you know, I think that we were very, very blessed with a principal who really, really believed and lived the idea of kol na'ar al pi darko, to teach every child according to their need. And really, it comes from the top. If your school leadership believes in this concept, it gets filtered down to the teachers, and from the teachers to the students and to the whole student community. I remember when Avi was born, and we had just really, he was really just had gotten his hearing aids. He was 5-6 weeks old, and I was outside her office. And she took me into the office, she says, "What's going on?" And I told her, and I said, "Where's he gonna go to school?" And she looked at me and she said, "I don't know how we're gonna do it." Because at that time, kids who had hearing losses, kids who had Down syndrome, who had autism, it wasn't the norm to have them in day schools and yeshivas. Now it's a very different world. She said, "He's coming here. We don't know how we're gonna do it, but he's gonna be here. He's part of our family." And that was so important as a parent to hear. And there were times where it worked better than others. I remember his fifth grade teacher, at one point, he was sharpening a pencil and she was talking to him. And she literally looked at him and said, "What's the matter, are you deaf?" And he took his hearing aids and said, "You think?" And I think our biggest challenge with him was getting the school to understand that we used to say to them, don't handicap him because of his disability. Treat him like you would any other obnoxious boy in your school, because he's obnoxious. And if you want him to belong with his friends and with his peers and really belong, and that's what this whole program is about, how to make them belong, you have to treat him like you would every other student in the school. So if he's fresh, if he doesn't do his homework, whatever his behavior is, give him the consequences you would give any other child. And the teacher would say, "But he doesn't hear." And we'd say, "So, if he heard, what would the consequence be?" And that was the biggest thing we had to keep insisting. But we had a school and a principal, and for the most part, teachers who really believed that these kids belonged in the school. And like I said, at a time that schools didn't do this.
Bhatia, did he need additional assistance?
He needed additional assistance. Being part of a day school, he got very little from the district. We fought the district almost every day. I think I was that parent who came into this child study teams. It was like, "Oh no, she's back every year." We kept being told he wasn't delayed enough. And I would call Trenton because I live in Jersey. And they would say, "Oh no, that's not how the law is written." And we would go to court with Trenton. And then they'd have to give him something, but it was never what he needed. We would have to use our own resources to give him the speech therapy and whatever he needed. It was honestly a battle. He would need extra help even within the school system. They had a resource room in the school. And it wasn't even, because some things he was really very gifted at. And there were other things. He had a lot of trouble with foreign language. So Hebrew language was really hard for him. He now lives in Israel, by the way. So that's an interesting, you know, dynamic. But even in yeshiva, when he went to yeshiva in Israel, his Rosh Yeshiva in Israel got him. He called me up. I thought, oh my God, 2 days into yeshiva and he's already in trouble. And the Rosh Yeshiva said to me, he can't hear in the Beit Medrash with 100, 200 kids learning at once. So I want you to know, he's not in trouble. He's great. He's doing amazing. I took his group and I put them in a quiet room because he can't hear. And I want him to be able to learn.
Wow.
And I said, where have you been all his life? You know, can you come and speak for Yachad and tell all these parents about, you know, what schools need to do? Like that sensitivity from a Rosh Yeshiva who really got our child, our adult child, I guess, at the time. So there was a point where he didn't need as much assistance, but yet they understood and they got the sensitivity. But even in college, when he got to college, he was at YU and the special services at YU, he was in regular classes, but they got him note takers that YU paid for because they wanted to make sure he was hearing everything that went on in class. And his Hebrew language classes became foreign language. His Chumash became Bible studies. So they were able to like rewrite the curriculum so that some of the Jewish curriculum of YU could be covered with note takers also. It was very interesting, creative work that department did, but he was able to get note takers from YU that were able to help him navigate lectures in through college, which was amazing.
Fantastic. So
really, kol hakavod, really a tremendous hakarat hatov to education.
I guess what you're pointing at really, Bhatia, is how much can happen with so little.
Yeah.
You know, with just moving outside of the room and with just reframing a small something,
yeah,
can change the person's life and experience, yeah. Right? David.
So the education piece, I think, is fascinating. I mean, I think there's always, the way I've always thought about it, there's always been, I think there's two models or two tracks within at least dealing with the type of disability that we deal with. And that is kind of the integrative model of placing your child in a typical environment and adapting, which I guess more along the lines of what Bhatia's situation and what she's been discussing. There are frankly many places outside the New York metropolitan area where just don't have the resources for special schools in the firm community. And there is no other option other than to just approach that, tackle it, and do the best you can. I remember early in my career in the rabbinate, exploring opportunities out of town, out of the East Coast, out of New York, and there was no special needs option. You basically were going to have to just figure it out, which is obviously daunting and frightening because you're dealing with, you know, your child may be 17, but he's in our situation, could be on the level of a fifth grader. Like, how do you manage that? Okay, so for whatever reasons, and I can't even articulate exactly why, but we've adopted or we've pursued the uniquely special education model for our child. Thankfully, they live in a place where those resources are available relatively in abundance. And it's a question of finding the right option, not finding the only option. So that's obviously very compelling. When he, in the early years, he went to typical schools. We lived on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. He was in a regular preschool program, integrated. He then subsequently, at a certain point when they felt it'd be beneficial for him to be in a special education environment, he went to public school for many years. did exceptionally well there. And you can't beat the price, and the services were extraordinary. But then at a certain point, when he became closer to the age of Bar Mitzvah, and he has a very big soul, very big neshama, as I alluded to earlier, in terms of his interplay and relationship with shul synagogue life. So we felt strongly that he should be in the yeshiva environment. And I will give a shout out. He goes to a yeshiva called Yeshivas Banim Hamakom, which is actually, it's in Brooklyn. It's part of, it's housed within Yeshivas Torah V'Das, although not part of Torah V'Das. And it's geared specifically towards young men with Down syndrome. So they really have like an expertise in this particular disability. And I mean, to say that it hasn't been, I mean, it's the most welcoming, warm place. We're probably the least religious people there on some level. Ironically, you can't measure people's religious observance. I don't mean religious, but I mean, like, let's say we're the least Hasidish there, or we're the least even yeshivish there. But be that as it may, it's a very, very, we're pretty religious people. So it's a pretty, but it's been a great environment for him. I mean, just Bhaja talked a lot about the services. I mean, the service piece of it is really fraught with complexity, and it's a discussion unto itself. But I'll just say very succinctly that, you know, if you live in certain places, if you live in Far Rockaway or you live in Manhattan, so you get easily get a lot of the services and the tuitions paid for. If you live where we live, so it's a constant battle. And every year we're hiring lawyers and we're spending crazy amounts of time trying to win cases that we end up winning and then we end up losing on appeal. And it's so frustrating. The school's amazing. I mean, they don't hold a gun to our head with the exorbitant tuition, but there is a feeling that we feel that, like, you know, the school needs money and the government won't pay. And so whatever, like we do a lot of fundraising for the yeshiva. You know, I think last year, just on my own, I raised like $15,000 above and beyond, whatever we are able to pay for tuition to help the yeshiva, because it's just, the costs are exorbitant. And if you don't live exactly in the right place, you can run into problems.
But you sound like you have people to work with.
Oh, like, sure.
A real committed group of professionals. And
yeah, very, very much so. I mean, if on some level, it's ironic that, you know, in certain realms, putting aside tuition, but the government does offer like tremendous services in terms of, meaning our challenge often is finding the right people to work with Yedidya in our home. The money is there for it from the government. We just can't find the right people to do the job. But they are offering kind of benefits or things that if we could find the right shidduch or the right, they do offer a lot of things that actually are helpful.
And I think that does speak to also New York in general, New York benefits, and the contrast between New York and other states, and even right. New Jersey, Bhaja, right?
It's interesting, you know, the mass exodus down south to Florida. I'm sure many people, even on the Zoom, probably have residences possibly in Florida at some point in the year. Florida actually has been stepping up, you know, a tremendous amount in terms of improving their financial resources for tuition in particular. It's pretty impressive. And there are other states that obviously, it is a little bit of a red-blue issue, but yeah.
So I do want to sidetrack for 1 second and give a shout out to Yachad's Reach program that we just inaugurated this summer, which is really a one-of-a-kind program, and many of you may not have heard about this yet. So what we started was a resource center, which is a call-in center that has different tracks, and what we do, people can call into this number, which we can get for you guys. We'll send it to Judy. And anybody can call in. It refers people to government resources, schools, summer programs, therapists. Early intervention programs are different tracks. We're launching it initially in the greater New York area, but it's going to be hopefully inaugurated throughout the country and then into Canada. Thank you, David. He just put it on.
I just put a link about an article that was written just
right.
today
and you right.
to be about it.
A link about it. And what it does is it doesn't just refer you to Yachad resources, but to what the correct resource is for your child, adult child or young child. So there's a person at the other end of the line that's taking information from you and matching the information you're giving to the different resources that we've been collecting and vetting, and helping parents and caretakers find the matches for you that you can then go and explore. And if matches work, great. If it doesn't, you can come back to us and we can further help you. So it's a different sort of resource center. It's really one of a kind, where we're really trying to match you to what's best for you and for your family, and not just within the Yachad family.
So sounds like you're not proud of this program.
We are incredibly proud of this program. I think we in the OU family in general should be incredibly proud of this program.
Yeah, I think it's going
to
really...
We will get that link to you as well through Judy, but if you read this article, the link is on that as well.
I think it's a very badly needed service. We hope that it'll go beyond New York, and we that's the intention, but it's certainly, it's the more information you have sometimes, the less you understand and know. And that's true for all families who have a child who needs something different or more. There's so much out there, and yet may not even be enough, but there is so much out there that we don't always know how to find it. So this is a hope to navigate and helping families. And I think from your own experiences, you're saying that it would have been helpful, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. So we touched on the school experience. We touched on the overall community experience. So much of developing and becoming independent and secure in yourself has to do with social opportunities and social interaction and self-esteem. I wonder if we could just spend a few minutes now on really looking at how was and how is it in the community for your child to actually have relationships, make friends? I think, we're talking about maybe a little bit more continuity, maybe a little more in-depth relationships, having friends. We see a lot of people maybe involved with people with special needs, but are they having longer standing relationships, or are they moving on? And where do they get their social interaction? So if you could just maybe comment on how it's been to make friends in the community for them. Was he included in other social things that were happening, whether it be birthday parties or events? Or did you have to push for that? Or do you look harder for that? Or do you have to create that rather than having it happen organically?
I would say, that's an interesting phenomenon and facet of this discussion that I think cuts in two directions. On the one hand, we have a Yachad center around our corner, literally. And every Sunday, when Yedidi's home from yeshiva, he has yeshiva on Sunday. We just don't send him for a multitude of reasons. But every Sunday, he goes over there for a number of hours, and he has social recreational activity, which is great. There's obviously their peers, their advisors. That's obviously very positive. Obviously, Yachad summer programming also creates a wonderful opportunity for him to benefit. He's been in a whole array of Yachad programs in different camps. Most recently, Morasha Yachad, where also there's great opportunity for socialization. Obviously, he has peers and friends from his carpool to school. From the boys who live in this area that go to his school. His friends from yeshiva, like any other child would have. So to say he doesn't have friends would be a misnomer. He definitely has friends. He definitely, even when he was bar mitzvah 3 years ago, one of the boys from yeshiva came for Shabbos for the bar mitzvah. I mean, it's not like Be'ez Hashem we're making a bar mitzvah in December for our next son, who is a typical young man, and I'm sure he'll have 30, 40 friends for Shabbos. Yedidi had one. Okay, it's a little bit different. But the one area that is lacking for him is that, I don't think he has kind of peer relationships with typical kids in his age group or age range in the community. And I don't know how that would be created. That would probably take, again, there's only so much that parents can do. We can do almost anything, but there's limited time and limited resources. just to, you know, to be able to invest in every little challenge. I'll tell you an amazing thing. A shul here in my community, Young Israel of North Woodmere, led by Rabbi Yehuda Septimus and his wonderful Rebbetzin. So they actually started an initiative in their shul, afternoon groups for special needs kids, not connected with Yachad, they took an initiative. They saw a need in the community and they try to make it happen. So that's also a niche or a particular need, but there is lacking. I mean, yeah, it would be cool if he had 10th, 11th grade boys in the community who would come hang out with him on Shabbos or come invite him or you know, he doesn't have that, you know, and I don't know. We certainly haven't invested in making that happen. He doesn't seem to be lacking from it. But at the same time, if there was in the perfect world, he would have that. And that would probably be an added benefit.
Do you think there's a lack of awareness? Do you think he notices that? Or
no, I've never really. Ever heard it. You know, he's a very happy kid. He's very happy. He's very self-sufficient. He has his games that he plays on his tablet. He has his cars he plays with on Shabbos. Like he has his shul. Like he likes to rest. Like he's not wanting. He's not unhappy. And I realize that could vary from child to child. And it could vary as he matures and gets older and becomes more aware that maybe he is not on the tip of the trajectory. So it's hard to say. But at the moment, I think it's more not that he, and if he really bothered him, we'd probably try harder. I think it's more just to a degree that there isn't awareness. Where would there be the awareness? Meaning like his peers go to typical schools. He goes to his own school. So just like when you have in a community where you have kids that go to different schools, the parents have to try harder on Shabbos to create play dates for kids from different schools so that they overlap or integrate or have friends. So we would have to make those efforts. You know, frankly, I don't think the parents of the typical kids are like, you know, it's more like a chesed project type thing. Maybe people call you, they're looking for that type of thing when he was younger. But I think at this stage, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it would probably, I would be dumbfounded if a mother or father in my community called me and said, hey, I have a 15-year-old boy. I was wondering if we could play with your son. I would be blown away by that because I would so not expect that to happen. It would be beautiful and we would make it happen, but I can't imagine how that would happen. You know?
And you're certainly saying that it's not commonplace at all.
I can't speak obviously, you know.
Well, in your experience.
In my experience, it's not so common, no, but I'm sure it happens somewhere. I'm just not aware.
And I'm also thinking that you happen to live in an area where there are Yachad programs or programs that are set up in the community in other ways. I'm also imagining that so many people live in areas that they don't have that. And that's
Chabad does a great job with their friendship circle. I don't know exactly how the friendship circle operates exactly. I'd imagine there may be an organization that, or this could be a great initiative for one of the organizations in the space to kind of, you know, we're working on retrain now, as we've spoken about a number of times. There's only so many things you can take on at once, but it seems to me like a cool idea to kind of create peer dynamics in the community. I've never heard of such an initiative. I've heard of peer dynamics. That I'm not familiar with.
Right. So Judy actually just reminded me that we have a couple of minutes to sum up things. And I want to get to that last question, which I think is, I would like to end like this, is, can you think of one or two ways that you wish the community would have responded and why to your child? Is there anything different, more?
So I wanna say a couple things. I think from our experience, I wish the rabbi would have, and I think our rabbi was amazing with us as a family, but I wish as a community, there may have been more of a way the rabbi could have addressed the hashgafic and halachic issues in a different way. Because it wasn't just our family. There are a lot of different people within a community that have different types of disabilities, and hashgafically, the idea of belonging in a community. I think the leadership of a community to address that hashgafically, back then it really wasn't talked about. And I think it could have changed some of the attitudes and some of the overwhelming sense within the shul and within the community may have been different. And the other thing, as a parent, and I think Devin may hear this also, is we're always hearing, oh, we know how you feel. And unless you're living this, you don't know how we feel as parents and as a family. And it's really something that people should think about before they say to a parent and to a family and to a sibling. It's really important that when siblings talk to other siblings, and maybe that's something else that as a community, we need to be really conscious of the community needs to become conscious of the siblings too. And so often this community is so sensitive towards our child with the disability, they just think the siblings are just getting by and are fine, and they're not. And we need to be addressing the siblings more also. And the community needs to be thinking and being sensitive and how the siblings are feeling that they belong also within the community.
I think that's a very important point. I can think of many times when I'm in a meeting with like a teacher of one of my other kids or an administrator and for one of my other children, and I'll mention that we have a child with a disability. I'm like, you know, like, I don't know, like, it's like, I mean, it may be contrary to what Bhatti was saying. All of a sudden, like, they assume like, like there's going to be trauma or issues, which maybe is not always the case. But certainly many times it can be the situation. So there's what to think about. I think I have to say my experience, it tends to be the opposite. I've been, until recently, I've basically professionally been like a public personality or a community leader in rabbinic leadership roles in communities. And even where I live now, although I don't have a pulpit, I still am known as a rabbi in the community. I'm not just kind of like another anonymous person. So I think sometimes there's a danger in that, in the sense that if you kind of, if perception becomes reality, if people see that you have everything under control, it looks like things are good. So they just assume everything is fine. And maybe my wife and I are guilty of having kind of always put on a really great face to the community at large. I really genuinely can't remember in the last 10 plus years, or basically the lifespan of our son, 16 years, anybody ever genuinely asking us if we're okay or if we need help with anything. I mean, that sounds bizarre, right? What I just said, but I really cannot remember anybody ever asking, how are we doing? Are we okay? And I don't mean like in a way that makes us feel bad. I mean, just generally somebody looking and seeing like, we have a child who's atypical, it must be challenging. Is there any way we can be helpful to you? And I can't remember, I'd have to ask my wife, I can't remember anybody actually ever asking that. I don't know if that's because we just do such a good job of making like everything's fine, everybody just assumes it's fine, or people are just so busy with their own lives, they don't notice. I don't know what it is. And I'm not saying I need people to be asking me day and night how we're doing, but I think it is striking that nobody's ever asked us.
Wow. So sounds like the takeaway is that people in the community, it would be great if people could tune in more.
I think it fits what I said before, which is like, you know, ask about the child like you'd ask about any other child, minimally, right? Don't make it like it's but just like you'd ask anybody who's overwhelmed or who has a lot on their plate, if you can be helpful to them, or how are they doing, or I know your situation may be a little heavier than anybody else's. Without saying that, you know, maybe I could be helpful to you. Or like, even like if we ever want to travel somewhere, like we always have to think about like kind of where, you know, so who's watching you, did you, or supervision maybe isn't as simple as for others. Mm-hmm. I understand it on the one hand, because everybody's so overwhelmed and everybody has their own peccala and their own challenges. And it takes a big person to be really always thinking about other people all the time. But at the same time, I think the community could be a little bit more in tune. Yeah.
Okay, both of you shared so many important and
personal
and vulnerable things with us that educated us and I hope sensitized us a little bit more. I really want to thank you both for being on the show, on the program with us. Judy, I know there was somebody who wrote something in the chat about something specific. I don't know what you want to do with that.
Okay, so just one second.
I actually just saw a couple of comments and I responded to a couple people. I think that were directed towards me. I don't know if David had some that were directed towards him.
Yeah, I have some personal ones. I just responded personally. Yeah.
Okay,
to the
person. I just realized it was a personal direct thing. So,
okay, so let me just share with you, this is beautiful. We got a comment earlier. It wasn't a question, but it was a resource and I've copied it. So hopefully we will put this later on as our resource. Somebody wants to recommend Neshamala magazine to all the participants. It's an amazing free quarterly digital magazine. And it's for from families of special needs children, and it's filled with informative articles in Chizuk. And I have the information, so we're going to put that in when everyone gets the recording. If anyone has any other questions, you're welcome to put that in the chat so we can address that you know, right now. Because I don't see anything else that's been sent to me.
Right.
Anybody
somebody did
any other comments?
Specifically ask about programs for Shidduchim and what are we doing about it. So I'm smiling because it's one of my favorite topics. And once again, it's being asked about and it's really good feedback for us to hear because it's not going away. It's only growing, this topic and issue. And it's something that I know Yachad is actually interested in. It's just not happening yet, but it is something that we're sort of working on and trying to figure out how to do it in the best way possible, in the most supportive way.
And our way also has an active singles registry for the deaf and hard of hearing. So if people have that particular population of special needs, if they want to address questions to me, I can forward them as well.
Do we have our emails on this program? Were they up there? I don't know.
We can certainly add them. We will add them to the email that goes out with the recording later. Okay.
Maybe that just could be posted, you know.
Yeah. So everyone.
Anybody has any specific things that they want to reach out about, I'm happy to respond.
Yeah.
Okay. But really a pleasure to join you today.
Thank you.
Thank you
for joining us.
Yeah, I don't see anything else. So I want to thank Amanda and Bacha and David. As everybody knows, the OU, even though we are occasionally in the office, we don't all send now during COVID get to see each other regularly. I don't think I've seen you guys in person in 2 years.
A long way.
It's nice to see you here. And hopefully one day we will all be at 11 Broadway and see each other on a more regular basis. But we thank you so much for spending your time with us, giving us so your personal experiences, because I think that really speaks to everybody and really what we can all do. And I think the bottom line is always being sensitive to everybody and probably many times filtering our comments, which I think we all could use a lot more of, and think about the other person. So thank you so much. I want to just remind everybody, we'll be back next week on October 26th. Another one of our OU colleagues will be speaking, Rabbi Ilan Haber, who is the National Director of the SEEF OU JLIC program, that's Jewish Learning on Campus. And he will be speaking on the 21st Century College Campus. Will your grandchildren be safe? As everybody knows, college now is a lot different than it was way back when. So we want to make sure that everybody is in a proper setting. We're not talking about YU or Tora. We're talking about other campuses, and the OU has many, many JLIC chapters on campuses. So that's what we'll be hearing about. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Take care. Have a great day. Have a great week. Be safe and be healthy.
Thank you.